Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What are we going to talk about today?
Glad to be here, and we have another exciting call covering some of the earnings releases and earnings management calls that we've been listening to over the last couple of weeks. As a reminder, this is the second part of a earnings coverage episode that we started last week, and we're looking forward to sharing some of the key takeaways that we heard from a handful of REITs, as well as real estate adjacent businesses. So today we are covering a total of 6 companies, 4 specialty REITs, as well as 2 brokerages. And we like listening to these calls because it really sheds light on some of the key trends that have taken place, as well as the trends that management teams are paying attention to for the coming quarters. So with that, Cole, why don't you jump into sharing who you covered and some of the key takeaways you heard from that call?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll kick this one off by giving a bit of a macro update because I think it'll shed some light on some of the broader trends that might have impacted the particular REIT that I covered. But just last Friday, we got retail sales. So this is a figure that comes out from the Census Bureau. And they actually fell on the month, but though they were up 4.2% on the year. So this was more than was expected, but it was in part due to some upward revisions in December. But what gets really interesting and why I'm tying this together with one of the earnings calls I listened to is some of the trends under the surface by type of retailer. If you were to look at grocery stores, sales were actually accelerating there, up 3.9% year over year. It was their fastest since March of 23. But at sporting goods stores and bookstores, sales actually declined in all but 1 month since last July. Now, general merchandise stores, that's your Walmarts, Targets, wholesale clubs, these are sales that remain pretty resilient. They've posted annual growth every month since the pandemic began. And now, what's important to note is that these figures are not inflation adjusted. So it's important to think about that when you discuss some of the trends. But I think that just generally speaks to some of the caution that might be needed to be exhibited some particular owners of retail real estate as we go forward in a bit of an uncertain economy. So that's a big intro to the REIT that I'm covering today. It's a triple net REIT. This is an Orlando, Florida-based REIT that was formed in the 80s. They have a portfolio of 3,568 single-tenant retail properties. They cover 37 million square feet across 49 states. About 1 in 3 of their properties are in Texas, Florida, Ohio, or Georgia. 1/3 of their reported revenue comes from Texas and Florida alone. And where this ties back to some of that data before, their top tenants include all different categories of major kind of retail anchor, sporting goods stores, and general merchandisers and such. But their top tenants include 7-Eleven, AMC Theaters, BJ's Wholesale Club, and Dave & Buster's. On their call, they actually beat consensus estimates on revenue for the fourth quarter and the full year 2024. They beat on earnings for both the fourth quarter and the full year 2024, but they missed on funds from operation for both the fourth quarter and full year 2024. So there were some key kind of CRE drivers of these results. They had good growth in their core FFO, 28%. Their occupancy was 98.5%, though that was down slightly on the quarter. It's above their long-term average of 98%. They invested $217 million in 31 new properties with an average lease duration of 20 years. 80% of the capital they deployed during the fourth quarter is actually through partners they have existing relationships with. And these are mostly sale leaseback agreements. So in the full year 2024, they had $550 million in acquisitions and $150 million in dispositions. Now, after their call, their stock was up 4.3%, and that was up 4.5% over the benchmark. But there were some really interesting management comments here. So they had a few challenges with tenants throughout the fourth quarter. They had a few bankruptcies that led to some open retail space, Badcock Furniture, and Frisch's. But they were able to make really quick recoveries. They aim to exceed 70% rent recovery without any tenant improvements. They were able to backfill quite a few of these locations. And a couple other things that were worth noting from their call: no major debt maturities until November of 25. They're planning another $500 to $600 million in acquisitions in 2025. They're seeing a changing of the guard with a longtime CFO retiring, welcoming a new one in the second quarter, 25. They also boast on the call a number of times that they've seen 35 years of consecutive annual dividend increases. So they're quite proud of that. And there was limited commentary on kind of the broader environment, but a few things I did want to mention. They expect cap rates to compress another 15 to 20 basis points for single tenant retail. They say competition has intensified in their kind of niche markets. And they say retail deal flow was up a bit in 2024 compared to 2023. And additionally, they're seeing a lot of interest in the medical space for potential leasing opportunities. So kind of interesting, this single tenant retail space. You service a wide range of different tenant types, but they seem to have done a relatively strong job of replacing some of these kind of legacy tenants that have liquidated, even though they've been on long lease terms and have custom fit outs. They seem to have had a pretty easy time replacing some of those. So definitely an interesting call. First time I've covered a net lease retail REIT, but Omar, I know that you covered another specialty REIT, but you want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, so I was tuning into the Rainier call, which was the first week of February. So we're a little bit off in terms of, this is not one of the most recent, but the timber REIT sector or subsector is a relatively small space. And so I thought that this was a good one worth highlighting, particularly because this is an area that I thought the call gave some good color on the potential impact of tariffs to the upstream impacts to the material cost for commercial real estate. So I know tariffs have been really dominating headlines recently. And last week, the Trump administration put out a memorandum or a directive really making sure that all the trade representatives are assessing and evaluating what the appropriate level of tariffs are for the U.S.'s major trade partners. And while the market, I would say, broadly digested this relatively well last week, there's still the there's still this expectation that tariffs are coming or higher tariffs are coming. And we've started seeing estimates of what that would mean for construction costs. Everybody's expecting construction costs, at least on the material side, to rise meaningfully. I've seen estimates from 10% increases up to the National Association of Home Builders is expecting a $3 to $4 billion in terms of what the impact felt by the construction space would be. And that could potentially challenge, it could push timelines out, but also raise project costs, delay projects. But with Rainier, which is a leading timberland real estate investment trust that has about 2.4 million acres in standing timber across mostly Georgia, Washington, and Florida in the U.S., but then also has large holdings in New Zealand. When they reported their results, they ultimately reported a beat on their fourth quarter and full year 2024 revenue and earnings estimates. They continue to focus on really reducing leverage across their balance sheet and continued their share repurchases to drive shareholder value. On the call, the management team noted that they view buying back their own stock as the most cost-effective way of acquiring timberland assets in the U.S. currently. And the management team also noted that they're evaluating strategic alternatives to streamline their portfolio and really improve their balance sheet positioning, and that includes potential asset sales. So overall, they beat. Some of the themes that tie back into commercial real estate is that they've seen that higher and better use and development property demand, which remained quite strong and contributed significantly to their strong real estate revenues over the last year. They expect that to continue, and they anticipate that an increase in timber prices and a modest rise in carbon credit sales will continue through 2025 as well. And in regards to timber prices, they're anticipating some stabilization after those markets have seen some recent market volatility. Shares, after they announced, jumped about 2.5% following the release, and this is up about 3.2% over their broad benchmark. Tying it back to the tariffs that I was mentioning at the top is that they anticipate that the potential constraints of the Canadian lumber supply will actually benefit the U.S. market and U.S. operators, and that the higher duty rates and the prospect of new tariffs may ultimately translate into just an overall improved operating condition for the North American lumber operators, particularly those in the U.S. And on the call, I thought there was a good response that shed light, particularly on the U.S.-Canada relationship, which, whether or not there are new tariffs coming into play, the existing duty rates that are currently being assessed from Canada are expected to reset later this year. So a new layer of tariffs or no new layer of tariffs, there's this expectation that there will be this rise in duty rates no matter what, and it should ultimately benefit the sawlog pricing in the U.S. They did give some guidance for 2025, and keeping it a bit more focused on the U.S., they see southern timber harvest volumes between 6.9 million and 7.1 million tons. This is a slight increase over 2024 levels. They also expect to see some significant cost savings from a 10% reduction in the U.S. workforce, as well as some ongoing $1.1 million in restructuring charges. And they're ultimately optimistic about improving U.S. lumber market conditions due to the undersupplied housing market and any potential lumber supply constraints that they're expecting through the coming years. The company does remain optimistic about the U.S. housing market and expects there to be further growth in development and in rural properties through 2025. So I thought, you know, that call, I know it's real estate adjacent, but interesting takeaways from an operator that's pretty far upstream and very close to feeling any impact of the tariffs. But overall, they were pretty optimistic on where they sit in terms of what that impact would be. And I know, shifting focus a bit from timber to a bit closer to data, what were you hearing when you tuned in to the Iron Mountain call?
Yes, we can call this another real estate adjacent call, because I think a lot of folks know of Iron Mountain, maybe didn't know it was a REIT, but Iron Mountain actually specializes in records and information services. So that's secure physical record storage, electronic records backup, but they also have ancillary services like secure document shredding, disaster recovery support. So it's a really interesting company. It was formed in 1951, became a REIT in 2014. They have 236 properties covering more than 24 million square feet, and more recently, 26 data center properties. So they operate across 45 different countries, have nearly 250,000 customers, and 95% of Fortune 1000 companies are customers of Iron Mountain. I think before we jump into some of the actual results from the call, it's worth calling out a few of their key business segments to remember as we're going through this. But there's that records and information management business I talked about. So they provide a secure offsite storage for physical records. And they offer services too for retrieval, transportation, and destruction. So this is the core business for them. They also have digital solutions. So that's converting physical records into digital formats through their scanning and imaging service. So this includes enhanced security and, again, disaster recovery capabilities if some of those records are destroyed. And then they have what they call active lifecycle management. So this is active records handling and accessing frequently used active documents to keep in compliance. And then they have their data center business, which is a lot more recent, but I think that's what a lot of folks would want to focus on from this call. So ultimately, getting to the results, they missed consensus estimates on revenue for both the fourth quarter and full year 2024. But they beat on earnings for both the fourth quarter and full year. And they also beat on funds from operation for the fourth quarter and the full year. So a couple of things to call out. Their records and information management business grew 7% for the full year. And a lot of this was actually from cross-selling to some of their other clients and their other businesses. They didn't mention a name, but they said they signed a four-year contract with a large Fortune 500 company. Their digital solutions business achieved record revenue. They signed 39 deals in the fourth quarter. And here's where the real growth was. Their data center revenue grew 25% year on year for the full year to $620 million. So they exceeded their leasing projections with 116 megawatts in 2024, and they're aiming for 125 megawatts in 2025. Their asset lifecycle management business actually grew 119%, but they had a few key acquisitions that made this possible. One is Wise Tech, another was APCD. Ultimately, their stock was down after the call, 7.1%, so down 7.5% relative to the Dow Jones All REIT Index. But there was a lot of valuable management commentary on the call here. This was their third consecutive year of dividend increases. They actually did increase their guidance for 2025, calling for total revenue of between $6.5 and $6.8 billion. They plan to invest $1.8 billion in CapEx. Historically, they've grown through acquisition, but they're looking to grow mainly through cross-selling across their various business units. They really still think, though, that data centers are the future of their business. They commented on a bit on the buzz around DeepSeek. And Omar, I know you'll talk a little bit about that when you talk about your call, but they said that this has not led to a reduction in customer CapEx or caused any significant pricing shifts. So it may still be too early to tell. They did comment a bit on their land bank initiatives. So what makes this unique to them is that they buy a significant amount of land for future data center development in some key markets like Northern Virginia. They reserve this land until certain conditions are met. Maybe that's permitting, power supply constraints, or just simply market demand. So they're acquiring quite a bit of land still in that land bank business. I think I wanted to mention one more thing. Their stock has really taken a beating in the last few days. It slid after it was mentioned in some Doge remarks from Elon Musk. Iron Mountain actually maintains an old limestone mine in Boyers, Pennsylvania that stores federal employee retirement paperwork. And so Elon Musk said the speed of the elevators in that Iron Mountain facility determined the pace of processing files for the federal government. So the reaction was fairly negative by investors. Their stock has slid at least 11% in the last 5 days, and that's through February 18th. So it's not always the actual results that are driving the price here. I think Iron Mountain didn't expect to be the subject of Elon's ire, but something to keep an eye out on. Sounds like a lot of different directions they're getting pulled in. Now, I know you covered a related call. Do you want to tell us a little about Equinix?
Sure. So it's a Redwood City, California-based digital infrastructure company. They own 165 data centers covering 24.3 million square feet, and that's globally, but about 44% of that square footage is in the Americas, 34% in EMEA, and then the remaining 22 in APAC. They reported results on February 12th. Ultimately, they missed on their Q4 2024 and full year revenue, net income, and FFO analyst consensus numbers. They did report a full year revenues of $8.7 billion. This is an increase of 8% from the previous year and marked 22 years of consecutive quarterly revenue growth, and also saw a margin improvement of 190 basis points over 2024, with 160 basis points attributed to really various operational improvements. So despite growing revenue, growing margins, they ultimately missed on analyst expectations. I think part of this is that there's been really sky high expectations for the data center and AI growth, but the results still show that there is a lot of growth and demand, but this was ultimately not up to analyst expectations. Some of the key drivers of the results, Equinix's xScale segment, which is really their hyperscale and colocation business, leased 150 megawatts in or through 2024. That's tripling the investment capital from the prior year. And this is really showing this super strong demand from cloud and AI sectors. And over half of the Q4 transactions involved high performance compute and AI. And so the company is still very much focused on simplifying their product portfolio for hybrid multi-cloud and AI demand. They experienced an impact on their reported numbers due to a much, much stronger U.S. dollar during Q4 of 2024. And so the currency fluctuations were something that they ended up addressing not only in their prepared statement, but then also in the Q&A. Ultimately, the shares fell 2.2% in the session following the announcement, and that was about 1.5% below the broader benchmark. And in the Q&A portion of the call, the management team noted that they continue their expansion efforts with new data centers in Singapore, which will be offering 20 megawatts, and ultimately have secured new cloud on-ramps in both New York and Mexico City. This should start feeding into kind of their overall materialized growth. And they expect 2025 adjusted EBITDA margins to be around 49%, which would be an improvement of about 190 basis points over their current EBITDA margins. There's still a lot of this kind of demand-driven growth story in place. Their call, which was on the 12th of February, this is obviously after DeepSeek news. One of the things that I think is most important to recognize is that the DeepSeek release was something that kind of shook up the existing narrative of AI. It almost introduced this, how expensive does it have to be? But ultimately, the Equinix management team addressed this comment by saying that they view their business as still well-positioned to enable the kind of broader AI transformation to spread through various organizations and across the economy. So even if the launch of DeepSeek changes up some of the economics of what that AI transformation looks like, ultimately, the demand is still there, and they still play a pretty critical role in that. What other companies were you tuning in to, and what were you hearing, Cole?
Yeah, well, I promise there is a little bit of AI and data center-related commentary on this next one. But this week, I think we wanted to do something a little different and cover some service providers and brokerages as well. So one of the calls that I wanted to cover was actually CBRE. They had their call on February 13th. Most people know of them if they're listening to this podcast, if not everyone listening to the podcast. But the reason that their call is important to cover, I think, is because they offer a range of products and services to property owners, occupiers, investors. They advise on leasing, sales, capital markets. They provide facilities, project management services, touching virtually every part of the commercial real estate market. So their management commentary is going to be something worth paying attention to. They beat consensus estimates for revenue for the fourth quarter and the full year. This was actually their third consecutive quarter of successive beats. Now, they called out some interesting things on the call. They deployed about $2 billion in 2024 for M&A, real estate co-investments, and share repurchases. It's around $800 million in shares repurchased since the third quarter of 2024. Their segments like facilities management, property management, project management, and other fee-based businesses actually grew 16% in the fourth quarter and 14% for the year. They saw record leasing revenue, with U.S. office leasing actually up 28%, as much as 30% in some of the major gateway markets, New York, San Francisco, L.A. They had strong recovery in their capital markets activity, but they're still well below peak levels. Now, property sales revenue increased 35%. Mortgage origination surged 37%. And they saw significant activity in their development business, specifically with data centers. So the sector's contribution to their core EBITDA grew from 3% just a few years ago to almost 10% in 2024. Their stock was up 2.2% after the call, up 1.8% over the benchmark. And there was a lot of interesting management commentary here. So they said it was their best quarter ever for core earnings and free cash flow. They expect that free cash flow generation will be similar in 2025 to 2024. They recently reorganized. So they're now into four kind of core groups here: building operations and experience, project management, advisory, and real estate investments. They plan to grow their development business. They are aiming for 50 plus projects in 2025, some of which will be data centers. Now, some growth drivers, though, are data centers and warehouse, industrial leasing. They expect to see low single digit growth in 2025. And they expect to see better fundamentals over time for their industrial business. So office leasing recovery, they say, is now spreading beyond New York and those gateway markets into other markets as well. And they also expect a gradual return of capital markets activity in 2025 with a lot of refinancings. So one last piece, and I remember mentioning this when we covered a couple of the calls on our last podcast, they saw improved long-term decision-making among office and industrial occupiers. So there's slightly more clarity about the political and regulatory environment than there was just before November. And so a lot of long-term decision-making now being spurred among office occupiers, which I think is something we haven't heard in a long time. A lot of good stuff on their call related to development, leasing, sales, property management. I think the big brokerages always have something interesting to say about the market. Omar, did you cover any this week?
Yeah. So I tuned into Newmark and their earnings release and management call. Newmark is a New York City-based brokerage and advisor. Similarly to CBRE, they touch almost all aspects of commercial real estate, whether that's capital markets, investment sales, financing, landlord and agency representation, as well as leasing, valuation, advisory, property management. List goes on. They touch almost all aspects. They ultimately reported very strong results, beating on the fourth quarter and full year revenue, EBITDA, and net income analyst expectations. Their fourth quarter revenue increased by 18.8% to $888 million. Leasing revenues grew by 15%, driven by strong performance in office transactions. So another kind of highlight for office. And their capital markets revenues increased by 20%. They anticipate growth in office employment and overall reduced construction pipeline, which they view as, I would say, accretive and positive industry, broad industry trends. And while the industrial sector faced oversupply last year, they do see an acceleration expected in the advanced manufacturing and chips sectors. So tying that back to the growth in demand for AI and AI adjacent industries tied to commercial real estate. Their capital markets platform significantly outperformed the industry. They saw a major uptick in mortgage brokerage volumes, 209% over a year. They saw GSE or Fannie and Freddie origination volumes also increase. and they saw their investment sales activity increase by over 70%. Overall stock reaction or the share price reaction was very positive on these results. It ended the day up about 3% following the call. And quite similarly to CBRE, quite a few, like I would say, really interesting nuggets from the management team on the Q&A portion of the call. If there was a question around Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac privatization and what that would mean for their business. Ultimately, the management team said that if Fannie and Freddie were to be private, the caps that they are targeting in terms of their origination volume would likely remain the same, but they would expect to see about a 20 basis point change in spreads, as they'd seen historically pre-GFC when Fannie and Freddie were private. On the topic of trade policy and tariffs, the management team shared their views that reshoring is ultimately a positive for the United States as it creates jobs in the U.S. And even if there were more tariffs or if there were, I'd say, a more contentious trade policy, this could actually be a benefit for the U.S. And then a final question that I would have found interesting was whether or not there would be any sort of uptick in bank loan sales. And the management team noted that, yes, they do expect there to be a steady supply of banks rebalancing their loan books and really selling off CRE exposures. However, they don't see it to be as accelerated as many people and analysts predicted coming into this rate tightening cycle, or really since the SVB and Signature bank failures. In terms of strategy, Newmark does plan substantial investment in AI to improve their efficiency and to support further growth going forward. And the company maintains a robust business pipeline, which they highlight multiple times on the call, anticipating strong revenue and a $630 million adjusted EBITDA target by 2026. In terms of guidance, Newmark forecasts 2025 revenues of between $2.9 billion and $3.1 billion. That would be up about 9% from 2024 revenues. And they gave guidance on 2025 adjusted EPS to be expected between $1.40 to $1.50 per share, which is about 14 to 22% increase from 2024. So a lot of good information on that call, touching on various aspects that impact CRE and the macro conditions at large.
I know that's not all of the calls we have left, so I do want to call out the kind of schedule for next week for some of the remaining REITs, a lot of other specialty sectors. So on the 25th, we've got American Tower and Public Storage. On the 26th, we have Lineage, Extra Space, and Ashford Hospitality. On the 27th, Postal Realty, Macerich, and Invitation Homes. And on the 28th, American Healthcare and Global Medical. And then we've also got some data releases that we'll be paying attention to, probably talking about on a future podcast, the FHFA House Price Index and the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Those come out on the 25th. We have new home sales on the 26th, quarterly GDP, durable goods orders, and pending home sales on the 27th, and the trade balance, wholesale inventories, and the PCE Price Index on the 28th. Omari, do we have any other announcements?
Yeah, sure. So I would add in that the industry conditions and sentiment survey for the first quarter of 2025 is open. We'll include a link in the show notes and highly encourage anybody who's tuned into this call to fill the survey out. And as a reminder, if you do fill the survey out, you have the option of including your email and you'll be able to get the results in an Excel file, as well as all the prior quarter's results. It's now becoming a pretty, I would say, interesting data set and a good gauge on, you know, folks in the CRE space in the U.S. and in Canada are how their views on the market conditions and how their sentiment have changed over now the last more than year. But then also, I would flag that we have an exciting episode coming up. Over the next week or so, we will be hosting Brad Case, who is the chief economist at Middleburg Communities, really to talk capital markets, the economy, and absolutely we'll be discussing housing in the U.S. And so I would highly encourage you to tune in to that episode because it should be exciting and insightful with Dr. Brad Case.
Excellent. Omar, I think that is all the time we have today. But before we sign off, I do want to encourage listeners that if you like the show, we'd love it if you would rate it. Give us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Leave us comments there as well. We will read them. Or feel free to send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We would love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. In the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.